everyone, it's Adam from Uberfoot 24 with my 38th stop off on the Welcome to Scotland series. I'm here today back up in the SPL, in the Premiership, at Hamilton Academicals, the mighty Ackies, and I'm with Sean McHugh. Good evening, Sean. How are you doing over there, mate?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Yourself, thank you.
I'm doing well, mate, doing well. Looking forward to learning about your club tonight. Now, Sean's the SLO. He's, now, he'll correct me if I'm wrong, but that's the supporters liaison officer. Really is, yep. Really, you know, fantastic role, really important role, connecting both the club and the supporting community as well. But before we get into it, though, tonight, big shout out, as always, to Stell at Shoot the Defence. Stell, really appreciate all the hard work you do behind the scenes. And thank you from bottom half to allow me to bring the stories from the Scottish football to the wider community. So thank you, Stell. But Sean, you're the star of the show tonight, mate. Academicals. It's a pretty unique name for Hamilton. How did it all start? Where did you get that name from?
Yeah, so I believe that we are the last remaining club in existence still who are born from a school football team, a school called Hamilton Academy. It dates back into the 1500s, I believe, the school. It was a boarding school. It was a fee paying school, and essentially we were born out of them. We were born in what is now known officially as 1874. However, there was a bit of ambiguity around that being potentially 1875. Recent sort of times, I would say probably in the last 15, 20 years or so, we've managed to nail that down to being 1874. Joined the Scottish Football League's late 1800s, replacing a side who are obviously no longer in existence. I think certainly to be pretty unique in the fact that you're born from a school football team, hence the academical name. Obviously, that being part of the academy. The school to this day. There is a school still on that site. It's called Hamilton Grammar now. The site in which where Hamilton Academy was, it is still to this day a school. When you think back that that was initially in the 1500s to now, it's incredible that it's still a place of education.
Really is, really is. And, you know, what a lasting legacy as well. The school that the club, the professional club has grown out of it. I'm going to give away my age now, but obviously back in the 80s, I remember Hamilton as a Premier League team, and then you disappeared and you were flitting around the other leagues for a few years and then popping back up in the Premier League and up and down and all over the place. But you've had some great names play for the club over the years. What have been the key moments over the last 20, 30 years for the club?
Certainly. Like you say, we did sort of bounce around the leagues. We moved out of our old home, Douglas Park, in 94. At that point in time, we were sort of going through a bit of or beginning to be the start of financial hardship for the club. Old Douglas Park is now it's a Sainsbury's. We sold it to Sainsbury's, but it's essentially a retail premise. There's multiple shops in that sort of position, just opposite where the actual stadium is today, to be fair. From then, 94 through to 2001, I think we went back home, but we then went through a period of homelessness, playing at Partick Thistle, Albion Rovers, Clyde, anywhere that would take us, to be fair, I think. Ultimately, has led to us probably losing a generation of fans, being homeless, playing in the lower leagues. It probably wasn't attractive enough for people to come and support the club. We went through such financial hardship that In 2000, the players hadn't been paid for a number of months, decided to go on strike, rightly so, in the sense that they weren't being paid. And ultimately it led to the club, which was in the second division at the time, being given a 15-point deduction to the league, which ultimately relegated us to the third division. Thankfully, we returned immediately, winning the third division and coming straight back up. At that time as well, the current owners of the club, Colin McGowan, Ronnie McDonald, Les Gray, got involved, bought the club, completed the stadium, which was at that point in time half built. They completed the stadium to what we've got today, and then started a period of growth for us, pushing us up through the leagues. Defining moment being in 2007-2008 season, we won the first division to get us back to the Premiership, I believe, circa probably the first time in about 23-24 years, something like that, maybe more, and that we'd be back in the top flight. That season also saw the start of what has now become known as a well-run youth system. We blooded at that point in time, James McArthur, Brian Easton came through the youth system at that point. They were aided by experienced pros that we had in the team. There was a couple of guys, Stuart Taylor's one that comes to mind. Stuart, most recently, I believe, was Ipswich Town's assistant manager, but has been involved with Aston Villa and stuff. But he was an experienced, he was probably coming towards the end of his career, 34, 35 type thing. He was helpful. Alex Neil was still a player at the time for us, and obviously must have aided these guys coming through. But watching McArthur and Easton, wow. James McArthur was 15 years of age when he made his debut in the first team, playing men's football at that age in the second tier of Scotland. Wonder kid, without a doubt. The two of them were, in fact, to be fair, you'd probably say three of them were, Brian Easton as well. Maybe just not get the glitz and glamour about them and whatnot. But James McArthur and McArthur were wonder kids. Were just superb. I remember one particular evening, McArthur, we played Kilmarnock in the League Cup. We were in the first division. They were obviously an established top flight club. We beat them 2-0. Could have been more. Probably should have been more. McArthur were just, I think that probably was the night they really came to prominence with the media, in terms of they were outstanding from start to finish that night, and I think people then started to sit up and take note. Wait a minute, what are these guys doing there? They're producing players here that are of an astonishing standard. Mm-hmm. And then obviously going into the Premiership, just further enhanced those two. McCarthy, I believe, if I remember rightly, McCarthy in the first season won Young Player of the Year in Scotland for a club like Hamilton to have that, to have someone winning Young Player of the Year, just shows you how good he was. Obviously, there was a bit of furore around the fact that he decided to go and play for Ireland rather than play for Scotland, which probably added to his reputation a wee bit, because it then meant he really had to go and live up to that. And obviously, he's getting booed everywhere and abuse shouted at him. And it just probably drove him on to be better. The two of them left at different times. They went to Wigan for substantial fees. Brian Easton went to Burnley at the time for a decent fee as well. Burnley, if you remember when he first went there, Burnley had just been promoted to the Premiership. Don't think he played in the Premiership, but he certainly played when they got relegated. He had a couple of games in the Championship for them. But McCarthy, well, obviously there's nothing more you need to say about those two in their careers. It's and what
incredible
done,
careers, just, absolutely incredible, yeah, Chris.
Do you know what I mean? Established. McCarthy's obviously sort of stagnated a wee bit. I thought that when he went to Everton, he would continue to progress and would. For me, there was no doubt he's good. He was good enough to play for the top four, without a shadow of a doubt. He had it all. But you look at like MacArthur, just not a veteran of the Premier League almost now, but just steady Eddie, 8 out of 10 every week, you know what you get. And yeah, the two of them, the career that they've had, and then obviously Brian Easton back at is now as our club captain, having left Burnley, went to St Johnstone, successful there, won the Scottish Cup with them. And he's obviously now back with us as our club captain. But over the years, youth system-wise, just number of players that's come through is incredible. Just Ali Crawford, Eamon Brophy, Michael Devlin, Greg Docherty, to name just a few guys that have gone on to do things more recent times. Lewis Ferguson. These guys, I mean, Ali Crawford, Bolton, Doncaster, I think he's at Tranmere now. Mm-hmm. Michael Devlin left, has become a Scottish internationalist. Greg Docherty, £600,000 move to Rangers. Didn't particularly work for him there. Probably a bit of a strange time. I think he was a Pedro Caixinha signing. And then obviously Steven Gerrard comes in, and you'd have thought Gerrard, midfielder, it would have worked, but he obviously just wasn't Steven's type of player. And he's away ripping it up for Hull in League One. Every other week now, you see him, he's scored or something, and he's by and large, when Greg scores, they seem to be crackers when he scores. But yeah, these guys have done that. But that all started from MacArthur Easton selling them on, reinvest the money. The club's ambition and our motto is, if you're good enough, it doesn't matter what age you are, you'll be given the opportunity to go and play at first team level. You'll be put in, so you can be 15, 16, 17. We'll put you in. And the youth academies, if you get to see it on an evening from 5 o'clock through to 10 o'clock, the helpfulness of having an artificial surface, that part from 5 o'clock through to 10 o'clock at night is used by youth teams right through. And obviously, as well as the ladies team as well, they use it for training and games. But we've been aided by the fact that all started back in 2008, bringing it up to sort of current date. Obviously, it's going to be a bit of a problem over the next couple of years. It's been stagnated a bit with the fact that COVID is hitting. Mm-hmm. We've not been able to play games. Financial situations of clubs, certainly ours, we don't have a reserve team. The best of the previous reserve team were promoted to first team to supplement that, because we weren't going to be able to bring in enough players. That then means that the next level down, sort of under 17, under 18, but these are lads that are going to be 15, 16, 17, haven't played in a year, haven't been near a first team environment, will be young, a bit inexperienced, so they're probably going to take 2 or 3 years to get it back to the level that we were at. Defining moment of the youth system has been 2018, I believe. We qualified for the UEFA Youth League through following an invincible season that the club had. Incredible. Had. We drew Basel over two legs. We drew two each over there. About 50 fans travelled to watch it. Could have and probably should have won the game over there, to be fair, actually. But this is a Basel side who had beaten Manchester United the previous year, home and away, and were in the group stage of the Champions League, the UEFA Youth League, the year before, which is two rounds beyond where we were.
Mm-hmm.
We then came home to play them, opened it up, free for everybody. 2,500 people turned up on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night or whatever, and the atmosphere was incredible. These doing guys that never heard of. And what followed was drama filled. We 2-1 down, heading out, 94 plus 40 or whatever. And you watch the goal. And I urge people to go and get it. It's on YouTube. You watch the goal. We lose the ball about 10 yards from our own goal, and then play football. You're 30 seconds to go in the game, and we knock it about. We play a pass, a guy runs with it for 10, 15 yards, then plays a 5-yard pass to somebody else. And then Lewis Smith, who's coming through at the moment, has been injured this season, and sadly, who's one of us, he's a Hamilton fan, a Hamilton season ticket holder. He plays a pass with the outside of his foot to play at a young lad who, with the all the calmness in the world, scores to send us to penalties. But the noise, the place just goes wild. And then the goalkeeper steps up, saves two penalties. We go through. We play Midtjylland or whatever it is from Denmark. Beaten 2-0 over there. And then beaten 2 or 3-1 at home. Very good side, Midtjylland. Three that side have gone on to play in the first team. One's being tipped for a big move across Europe this summer. Who really stood out, to be fair, I've got to say. Mm-hmm. Big, tall, sort of. He looked better than the rest, and played in the middle of the park for them. Really good player. But a club of Hamilton, we've never at senior level been anywhere close to European football. And here's the youth set up going and doing its thing in Europe. Just incredible. I certainly would never have said in my lifetime I'll ever see Hamilton in Europe. I could dream. The fact is that these guys actually got us to experience it, albeit at youth level, but you still had that experience of going and mixing it, as I say, with some clubs. And I think at the time, certainly for the first round draw, you could have drawn Montpellier, Benfica, there was all manner of clubs. And even to be fair, Basel's it's a renowned name in European football. You still know who they are. And to have that opportunity to go and play them and then hold them over there in their own backyard, be seconds away from going out at home, and then to ultimately beat them on penalties, and then come up against a very, very good Danish side, technically a lot better than us, bigger, stronger, but still didn't disgrace herself to get beat 2-0 over there, and then obviously 2 or 3-1. I think it might have been 3-1. I think they scored late on to really kill the tie off. But to have that opportunity is incredible. But again, that all goes back to the start of McCarthy and McArthur and Easton, and the money that they generated has propelled that, alongside selling on other assets, youth team players who've come through us. We reinvest it and we regenerate.
It's brilliant to hear. It's great. Great to see that you're really helping the next generations of Scottish footballers and giving them a place to develop. Now, just change tack for a second. Of course, you know, you mentioned there for a club like Hamilton, what an experience it is. For some of our people listening, they won't quite know where Hamilton is on a map. It's one of those places that you hear about, but where exactly are you in Scotland, Sean? Sure.
So we're in Lanarkshire, so we're about, I would say, probably about 12 and a half miles from Glasgow. Southwest of Glasgow, or west, southwest probably, of Glasgow. That's the most notable nearest city. We're about 12 miles from Glasgow.
Okay, so as you know, sort of Celtic and Rangers, your main rivals, or are there any other clubs nearby who you consider
not that. I would never consider our local colonial cousins, as I like to call them, across the water, Motherwell, bigger than anyone. They're local rivals. Where do you begin with this one? They don't classify us as their derby. Their local derby. Their local derby to them is Airdrie, who've been miles down the league for years. They've played us more in recent times, but hey-ho. I would say they've got a sense of entitlement about them. They won a Scottish Cup 30 years ago or something, and all of a sudden it means that they are one of Scotland's top dogs. For us being the small team and they don't really care about us, social media is awash with our name being on their social media pages quite a lot. So, you've got them, you've got Airdrie, Lanarkshire's got, what's Lanarkshire got? Five Lanarkshire's got five clubs, top flight clubs, or in the football league. You've then got the Lowland League, which is now part of the pyramid system. You've got one side there as well. You've got two in the Lowland League. Caledonian Braves and East Kilbride, they're both within the local area. Then you've got Albion Rovers, Airdrie and Clyde, and all sort of Lanarkshire-based. Lanarkshire's huge. I think it's one of the, it's either the second or third biggest sort of region in Scotland.
Do you have better, I mean, you mentioned Motherwell there, you have better relationships with the other clubs in Lanarkshire, or is it a similar thing?
I wouldn't say that. You probably have better relations with them. Airdrie maybe not as much, because for years you're playing Airdrie consistently. Obviously they've gone through a period of real hardship over the course of the last few years. They went out of business essentially, and obviously have come back and are still around, but obviously they've sadly been the victims of that and not been able to progress higher up the leagues, because I think certainly mid-90s they were a well-established team in the top flight, and then just over time they've sadly fallen away. Albion Rovers, you don't really have many dealings with them. Same with Clyde. As well. Clyde, to be fair though, was a bit feisty when they were certainly up first division wise. Ronnie and Les and Alan, who are involved, Alan's our chief exec, they were involved at Clyde prior to coming to us. Kind of just sold up and moved to us. We took their manager at the time, several of their players. That was a bit feisty. We used to, there's been some very good battles over the years with them. Sadly, they've again as well been the victims of financial detriment, of falling down the leagues. Thankfully, I've never went out of the league or anything like that, but they've come close a few times. They're fighting their way back, but yeah, Motherwell's for us. It's the first one in the fixture list comes out in the summer. It's always where are we first? What's the first away game? And then right, when's the Motherwell games?
brilliant. You mentioned there as well the change of ground. Now old Douglas Park, I apologise if I named it wrong there. Was that centrally located in Hamilton?
We're just outside of the town centre. It kind of falls in an area. I would say it's White Hill, in the White Hill area of Hamilton, is where it falls. But yeah, you would probably say town centre to us. It's only 5 minutes drive.
The new ground nearby, or is it out on the edge of town?
No, it's right next to the, essentially it's back to back. From where we were, if you look at Google, you'll see Google Earth, for instance. You'll see where the ground is, but you'll also see Sainsbury's. Morrison's runs alongside it as well. But certainly where Sainsbury's was or is, sorry, that's where the ground was. Around about the car park area.
So you can nip into a Sainsbury's to get a pie before the game, then?
Sainsbury's and Morrison's. Hamilton's a supermarket town. We've got everyone in the list is in Hamilton.
Oh, brilliant, mate! Brilliant. I love it. I forgot what I was going to ask you. Now you got me. I've gone thinking about my food already. No, that's what I was going to ask you. There was a man from Hamilton I spoke to once. Told me you've got a gazebo in your ground. Is that right?
Yeah.
What's the ground like?
So the ground's got two stands. It's one of these modern or new, fairly modern stadiums, the front row of the stands are raised about 6 foot off the ground, so you're up, you're not down pitch side or anything like that. Yeah, it's raised up, so you're not pitch side or anything. We have a gazebo, Wendy House, or whatever else you want to give it an iteration of. I think it holds about 500. Mm-hmm. It's only ever used for Celtic and Rangers. Sometimes some of the bigger club, the bigger supported clubs, so like a Hibs or a Hearts, they've used it in the past as well. You tend to find that it's used by them. Yeah, we've got that. We have some other unusual features for a football stadium. We have a nature trail, which is actually for kids with autism. So it's got 3D drawings, animals, etc. The nature trail essentially takes you around the world. So you've got the continents, animals from those continents, fun facts about the continents, etc. What else do we have? We've got a chicken coop. So there's four chickens or three chickens. We have a wall that's basically got paintings by street artists, etc. So one of them has been famous Scottish boxers over the years. That's on it. We've got things about the wonders of the world. We then have about kids with autism, Down syndrome, etc. We also have a sensory garden as such, sensory room. There is also a sandpit. Thankfully, you can't see all of this when you're in a stadium. It's kind of surrounded by coverings, etc. So you don't exactly see it, but it's all held behind this. Which is obviously aligned to a lot of the community work that the club does. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the ground is, it's unique. Our chief executive is very charity and community orientated. And he throws in the line and, we play some football here sometimes as well, within the confines of the stadium.
I mean, we laugh and we giggle there, but if you put serious on for a second, I think it's the great untold story of Scottish football. The community action that takes place, not only, you know, as you mentioned there, Hamilton, across the whole country. I think it's bloody brilliant, for want of a better phrase. It really is. Can you tell us a bit more about what goes on at Hamilton?
So... the club's sort of main the main sort of not the main charity the one of the bigger charities is what's called Blameless, which does just all manner of wonderful things. So it helps families who've got parents who are recovering addicts. It helps them for those affected by drugs, alcohol, kids with Down syndrome, autism. You name it, the club is there to support people within the local community. Through that, they're able to bring kids to the football when obviously we're allowed fans in the stadium. It gives them that. It gives them an opportunity to come in. We've obviously got a large function suite. So we've got a community cafe that happens once a week, which is all through Blameless. We do, let me think now, we've got a thing called Men's Shed, which is for guys of an older generation as such, who either may be on their own, may be unable to work through ill health, etc. It gives them an out, they can come in, they get given projects. So they can, build a garden bench for somebody, or they can do anything. So it gives people an outlet like that. We do Gain Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. The club goes into schools in the local area to speak to kids about the pitfalls of drugs and alcohol. Our chief executive, Colin McGowan, is a recovering alcoholic and drug addict for the last 34 years, I think now. We also have a number of people who work alongside him. So the one of the more prominent ones that works alongside Colin with that sort of stuff is, and some people may know this name, a footballer called Colin McNair, who played, I think, with Motherwell, possibly played at Hearts as well. Colin tells his story very candidly that he was up and coming, promising 16, 17-year-old footballer, and then fell into drugs, fell into alcohol, and ultimately into into the criminal system. And you I see him now right now and again around the stadium when he comes in for games and stuff. And obviously you can tell that it's a man whose life has been affected by drugs and alcohol. He's now in recovery and clear of that. But the work that the club does within the community, I don't think is fully recognised and appreciated by the community. It does things that are just... it blows your mind at times to see what they can do and what the families that they help. It's simply incredible that we have all of that going on at a football stadium. And as I say, they'll help anybody. They go right down to over the years they've helped rehabilitate people who've been in jail for long periods of time, rehabilitating them back into life. Through maybe giving them jobs, helping to just clean the stadium, getting them back ready for life on the outside. They go into prisons to speak to people. They give them opportunities. And yeah, the community work that, like you say, Scottish football as a whole does some incredible things. The work, as much as I don't like ever praising them, Motherwell, they do things around men's mental health at the moment, which is something that's affected their club particularly badly. From a fan base point of view, they've lost a number of young, predominantly males, to suicide over the last few years, and the work that they do is incredible. And there's other things that clubs do through their own community outreach programmes, but for me, Lanarkshire sets the bar above as a whole. Just for the work that Motherwell does, the work that we do, Lanarkshire sets the bar above in terms of just the community stuff that it does. It's just simply incredible. But from our own point of view, yeah, it's incredible to watch and see.
Really is. It really is. And say, well, congratulations to all the, you know, all the volunteers and the support workers that are going on there. Now, we get obviously your role at the club. As SLO, you're sort of the key link between the supporters and the community and the club. What does it actually, you know, entail? What does, you know, what does your role undertake? Everything can that's going on, I imagine.
Yeah, people think that you don't do very much, but yeah, you do quite a lot. Essentially, you're the guy in the middle between the fans and the club. So you, and there's this misconception that you work for the fans, and there's this misconception that you work for the club. You do neither. Essentially, you're there to adjudicate. Almost, you're an outside entity. You're providing advice to the club about things that they want to do, maybe statements that they want to put out. Providing them the fans' views. Fans maybe want something signed or meet a player or get a birthday message or something like that. I can facilitate that. Their seat might be broken in the stadium. We don't know about it, so they can report it through me. They want to know about stock in the club shop. So rather than waiting on the phone for hours to try and get through it someday, or sending an email address that bounces between five different people, they send it to me and I can just basically pick up the phone and say, I need to know X, Y, and Z, through to speaking to the club's chairman, manager, anybody, nobody's off limits, essentially. You can speak to anyone. I think certainly, for instance, recent times, obviously we've got a wee bit of concern financially about what's happening with the fact that we've not had any fans in the stadium at the moment. Mm-hmm. We never sold season tickets. We took that decision to do that. So there was no cash flow from the fans as such, other than the streaming of games. Our chief executive had made a couple of statements via the local media that were a bit concerning to me. So I took the first time I've done it, I've been in the job 5 years or 4 or 5 years now. I wrote an open letter to him, published it on social media, basically with a number of questions saying, listen, it's time that he answered these questions in an open manner. The fans need to know. And he responded. And that's the type of relationship we have. I think a lot of fans think that you're in there as a yes man and you'll just do what they say. Believe me, if they could hear some of the conversations that me and the chief executive have where we're shouting and bawling at each other is an understatement. And I think that works because I do the job for free. So I'm a volunteer for the club. I do it for nothing. I hold it down whilst having a full-time job and a family. I do that. And I think that's how it works because I'm able to say no to him, to things he wants to do. And I can say, no, you're not doing that. That's just stupid. Whereas people that work for the club, essentially, that's their main source of income. That's where they're getting paid. And they kind of have to just go with whatever he's coming up with. So I think that they get a unique sort of part of they can run things through people at the club, but also running things through me. And I'll say, that's a great idea. Or, no, that's the most ridiculous thing I think I've ever heard you say. But it can be it's a very lonely job, believe me. It's when things don't go well, it's you that gets it in the neck. As much as the players and the manager and the board get it, I also get it in the neck and get shouted at and bawled at. And listen, I'm thick-skinned enough to be able to take it, but it can be draining at times.
I can imagine. I mean, what are your supporters like? They are a noisy bunch on a match. Do they make a good racket in the ground?
Yeah, they do. They do, to be fair. They do make a good racket. It's one of the annoyances, to be fair, over the last two or three years, is that we used to have a drum that's kind of stopped. But it created a great atmosphere, lots of young kids getting involved, and they are when they want to get behind them, they can really get behind them, and the noise that they generate for a small fan base is great. And they're a loyal bunch. It's certainly away games, for instance, always the same faces you see travelling the length and breadth of the country to watch us at whatever manner of time it may be, whatever it may be. They're there, and they might be small in number, but they can make a racket, that's for sure.
That's great. I mean, you mentioned that you can kind of get it in the neck, all the praise depending on how the results are going. Are you sort of the main voice of the supporters when it comes to the running of the club, or are there supporters on the board there, or things like that?
So we don't have supporters on the board. We've not had a supporters association or trust type thing for a number of years now. I believe that there is some sort of entity being created at the moment, which I haven't had direct dealings with them yet to try and fully understand exactly what their plan is. But yeah, in essence, as much as the people will see it as you are the voice of the fans, you're there to liaise between both parties. And you need to take on board. And there is, listen, fans think that you can move heaven and earth to get them whatever they want. There's a lot of times when they ask for things and it doesn't work. I think a lot of that comes down to, though, finance and how football clubs work. They don't work like normal businesses. Mm-hmm. And that's, thankfully, through my own professional life, I work in financial services. I work in banking company. So I understand how business works. And having now been in for 4 years, and they've been a very open book with me, because I've obviously asked questions that are not silly, and I ask them questions that are thought-provoking for them. They've been very much an open book, be showing me a lot of the inside and inner workings of how the club actually works and runs, which I don't think anybody else would get. I don't know what other supporter liaison officers around the country get interaction-wise. I would doubt that very many of them have the level of interaction that I have, and the level that you get to see information within the club that nobody else would get to see.
Oh, that's great to hear that, Sean, as well, because it must give you a certain level of comfort in the way that the club's being run, because you know that when something's going to happen, you're going to be aware.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's the biggest thing now. In the initial part, that was still an issue. They weren't making me aware of things. You were having to be a bit reactive to things and mm-hmm. just almost, oh, I knew that was coming type thing, rather than, but really deep down, you didn't. But now, yeah, you get a heads up. Sometimes it can be as close to the statement is being uploaded on the website right this very minute, but FYI, sometimes you get 2 or 3 days notice to sit on things and know what's yeah. coming. It's helped in recent years. We've really stepped up our media side of things.
Good.
And having our media guys in, like Marcus, he's obviously, ultimately it's him that's putting the information, for instance, maybe on the website or whatever. Marcus is very much sort of on the proactive side of, listen, FYI, this mm-hmm. is going to be coming out. This is what it is. I'm going to be posting this in a couple of days. Here's the information sort of thing. He's giving you that to give you the heads up.
Ah, brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. Well, I want to get you back to your family soon enough. So just a couple of questions now before we wrap things up. Obviously, you know, like every club, not just in Scotland, globally, we're looking forward to getting supporters in as quick as possible. And as we're recording this, some good news, I think, has come out today regarding the European Championships this summer, and a better idea on how many spectators we're getting there. But we want people coming to Hamilton as well to visit New Douglas Park and see if they can spot all those things, Sean, you said are hidden behind the scenes. But more importantly, we all know what football fans love, and that's a good point and a bite to eat in particular. For those who've been listening to the series, you know that clubs all across Scotland have been raving about their pie selection. That's why I dropped it in earlier. So where is the best, where would you recommend people go for a pint and to meet some Hamilton fans before the game? And
so, so we've got, round the stadium, there's Hamilton's got great transport links, essentially, from Glasgow and Edinburgh, to be fair. And the stadium to the train station is probably about a 2.5 minute walk down a lane, which, as I say, the train station services were certainly directly from Glasgow. Edinburgh, you would need to go via Motherwell. But again, mm-hmm. it's probably the difference of a couple of stops. But when you go off that train, at the train station, you've got directly opposite, there's a pub called the Academical Vaults. And then just round from that, there's another couple of pubs round about that, Bar West. I can't remember the name of the other. The other one used to be called the Tap Room, but it's called something like the Peacock and the Ostrich or some nonsense like that. One of these new Fernando names that they come up with. Yeah, one of these places that you, if somebody to say it to me even now, I'd I'd be like, where the hell is that? And then they go, the old tap room. All right, okay, I know what you're talking about. So yeah, there's a couple of pubs there. Mm-hmm. We at the ground have a function suite which will be open. It was open. We only started doing it in the last couple of seasons. We've started opening it up. However, with circumstance, it was a third party that was running it. We now run it in-house. Sadly, due to COVID, we've only been able to use it twice or three times. We actually, this season, for three away games, we done a deal. Fans could pay money. They could come in and they get a meal. Watch the game on 7 televisions we've now put in. So you were able to stream it. It was an away game, but it was an opportunity for, I think we'd done it, it was about 80 fans, was the sort of permitted number with social mm-hmm. distancing, but we managed to get that. When you'd 80 fans been able to get together again with people you probably hadn't seen for a while, and they got an insight to what we're trying to do. Going forward, we hope to obviously continue that, so we'll be able to show Sky Sports, BT Sports, etc. That fans can come in at, say, 12 o'clock on a match day, come in, get a drink. We're going to do hot food. So it might be we do the old sort of burger and pint sort of for a fiver type thing mm-hmm. or whatever we sort of do. We're going to do it today to that, but it's going to be child friendly. Kids can come in as well, so you can get fathers and mothers to come in. 12 o'clock, kids can run about with other kids. You can have a couple of drinks, etc. It's warm, you're in the stadium, so you would be just pay your admission fee at the door as you come in, and then that's you're in.
Brilliant.
So we're doing that. We're hoping to open that up to away fans for certain games. TBC, admitting, I don't know, that comes down to a decision between... That comes down to a security decision on the week of a match day. I leave that decision to them. I put my input in where I need to. But yeah, there's certainly three pubs within close vicinity of the stadium. And there is a number of others round about that are within walking distance, to be honest, for people to go to.
I got to ask, I mean, because I think this started off with Alloa. And if they're listening, I apologise, because every time now I mention you guys and your pies over there. What are Hamilton's ones like? Do you consider them the best in the league?
No, they're not. Let me say they're the best in the league. They're not great either. The issue you've got, all of that, so the whole hospitality area, so pie kiosks, the pie stalls, the bar and the function suite was all third party led mm-hmm. until last summer. So it's all going to be different. It's all going to be new. So hopefully going forward we can do certainly different things. The guy who is in doing it now for us, our catering manager, obviously we home games, we're still providing, we do, it's like small hot boxes we're doing for the directors. Mm-hmm. Etc. Have tasted it though, because I'm still getting into home games. I have tasted them. Pies, to be fair, are decent. I'll give him that. And he's promising to do burgers, etc. as well when the season opens. And from the three games that we've done where we offered food in a more sort of formal setting, it was very good as well. So I've got high expectations for the game.
Brilliant. Fingers crossed on that point. It is, you know, it's a really yeah. important part of the match day experience. I think we all
agree. Of course. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Sean, one final one before we go. When the fixture list comes out, you mentioned Motherwell, obviously, for Derby reasons. But what places, I mean, doesn't have to be Premier League teams, of course. What places do you look forward to visiting around Scotland? You know, it's... For me, it's about promoting the whole of the league.
Everybody who's a Hamilton fan who likes an alcoholic beverage will look forward to Ross County away up in Dingwall, because it's 9 a.m. start and you're not back home 9 p.m., 10 p.m. that night, because you're... Well, we're at Dingwall, for nobody that knows the geography, you're about 25 minutes past Inverness, so you're heading to north of Scotland. So yeah, it's a long old day. Only the hardened alcoholics can suffer a supporters bus up and down to there, that's for sure. Aberdeen as well, for similar reasons, 2.5-3 hours in the bus.
Yeah, great fun. Try
to think where else. Dundee, they've got as well. St Johnstone. The good thing is we've got one supporters bus that goes to every single away game. Mm-hmm. And it's been going for forever and a day. Mm-hmm. Because it's been doing that, and because of the areas that it visits, it's got the same, it goes to the same, books into the same pubs. So the pub's expecting the bus to turn up. So you go to the same places, and some of the places that you go to around the country are tremendous days out. Just, do you know what I mean? And the bus leaves earlier so that it's got more time in the pub and stuff like that. Like, for instance, you go to Dundee away or Dundee United, you could leave at, say, 12 o'clock and be there for kickoff. No, our bus leaves at 10 in the morning so that it gets to the pub for 12 and it's got a good 3 hours in.
Great fun.
In the
great
pub fun. Or whatever. So, yeah, places like that. And then, obviously, like I said, Motherwell, predominantly, over the last few years, they've made it that there's a derby at New Year. So whether it's New Year's Day or the 2nd, there's predominantly that. So the fans have got that to look forward to as well. We played them 2nd game of the season this year as well, very early in the season, which was a pretty warm day, if I remember. And if there had been fans, it would have been a very good day because we scored late on to win.
Oh, very good. Very nice. Well, so I mean, I wish it.
Lanarkshire's red and white this year for sure. It's, we're 3 out of 3 so far against them, so it's very much at our county at this precise moment in time.
I have to say the Motherwell fans did. They weren't very happy about it, but they did also point it out to me this year when I spoke with them earlier in the season. I've got to wish you the best. got to wish you the best of luck for the remaining games. Obviously, the split's coming. Certainly got a lot riding on it for you. So, yeah, hope.
Massive. More so than any other year. Massive.
Yeah. Really is. Really
you don't
is.
Want to be go. You don't want to be going down this year. That's for sure.
It's going to be a tough one. It really is. Well, fingers crossed for you. Really appreciate you giving us your time tonight. Those of you at home, I've had some technical issues, so Sean, he must feel like he's been here 5 hours already. A bit like that. But yeah, mate, thank you so much for this. If people at home, they want to follow the Hamilton story. Where's the best place for them to do it online?
Social media, club website. There is a book written by a fan, details 25 years. Don't get me wrong, it's a bit outdated now. Ian Kelly, his name is, he wrote a book, very much one of the sort of club historian, or he knows the history of the club inside out. He's one of a couple of people that I'll use for information on former players or whatever. But there's a book there. Details a sort of 25-year period, but it details that period of homelessness. That's listed. Social media, we've got an up-and-coming band of fan media, certainly on social media, who we've got one only Ackies, they're called, do a podcast every week on YouTube, etc., and all the other places talking about games, but they also do a fan reaction type one right after every home and away game as well, so things like that. And then, as I say, club website, the club website as well.
Oh, cheers for that. We'll put the links in the description with this as well. That's it for today, everyone. 38th club in Scotland done. It's been a great story, really enjoyed it. It's another one for my bucket list, and I hope it's going to be for yours as well. But till next time, everyone, take care. This is Adam at Ucrafoot 24 with another podcast for Welcome to Scotland. Take care, everyone. Goodbye.